3 months later, 5 Helena residents in different locations reported an object, described variously as cigar-shaped, a flaming disc, or wing-shaped. 14. Sadly, Leo's younger brother Mike was reported killed in action in 1950, during the Korean War. In 1962, while driving with his 3 young daughters and 2 of their friends at Sappington Junction, Montana, Leo saw a spaceship moving through the evening skies. Perhaps this was an ideal opportunity to secure supportive evidence. It was difficult to pick my way over the dark mountain roads, but finally I drove my car within about 200 feet of the spaceship. It was hovering about 20 feet off the ground, producing all the colors I had witnessed before. It was very hard to contain my disappointment when I saw that the girls were all frightened. There was no way to convince them no one would hurt us. We watched the ship for only about half an hour. Several times, I flashed my headlights at them, certain they knew the girls were with me and were scared. I was convinced it was the same spaceship I had seen back in 1932 and again in 1939, and had no doubt that the same people were aboard. In 2010, Leo's only surviving daughter, Frances Tursk Hankinson, provided a testimonial to this event for me. "The only experience that I have had with UFOs is when Dad took me, my 2 sisters, and 2 of their friends over to Sappington Junction. It was late evening. He told us there was something he wanted us to see. He parked out in the middle of nowhere, and had us watch the sky for lights. It was getting late and darker and we wanted to go home. When we spotted lights in the sky, to the best of my recollection the lights were auburn, green, and yellow. The lights were flashing but stationary. Dad flicked the headlights in their direction, and they repeated the same pattern back at him. He did this several times, then it was gone. I have never seen anything like it since." 15. One summer's evening in 1963, Leo was driving from Menes to Sappington Junction when he spotted a craft in the process of landing in the foothills about 6 or 7 miles off the main highway. He stopped the car to watch. Another car drew up and a couple got out and confirmed what Leo was seeing. He then asked the man to follow him, planning to drive as close as they could, then walk the remaining distance to the ship. The man refused, explaining that he'd experienced a close encounter with a craft in California which had alarmed him. While driving through the same area on the evening of October 21, 1963, Leo decided to try to initiate another contact. At around 20:15, he parked his car and set off on what he guessed would be a very long walk to the landing site. Arriving in the vicinity, he could see the ship, parked down a rugged slope. When I was about halfway down, I noticed the area around the spaceship was lit up with the soft, indirect light I remembered so well. I could see about 6 people moving about on the ground. As I came closer, I saw 2 of them were moving my way. The men greeted Leo enthusiastically in the same manner as before. They confirmed that they had monitored him, for instance, during his experience with a couple in a car. "You should have known, after all these years," they said, "that most people will not believe you. But this time was different. This man knew of our existence. He had seen us before, but had allowed his fear to convince him that we are a threat." On board the craft, sitting in the extraordinary chairs, a lengthy discussion ensued. Part of the information on board referred to attempts by our military to capture one of the alien ships. "Your science and technology have advanced enough to pose a threat to our ships, as well as to the entire planet. If your military leaders continue their efforts to damage our ships, we will be forced to defend ourselves. Our actions to protect and defend ourselves are governed by a simple principle: anything that is thrown at us will be thrown back to its source." In this connection, Leo related to me that when he owned some petrol stations in 1974, a man was filling up his car when another customer asked him about UFOs. Leo joined in the ensuing conversation, relating some of his own experiences. The customer, a recently retired Army colonel, revealed an incident that had occurred in the U.S. Southwest. We had 240 guys out in the desert and we tried to shoot down a craft, he said. But they returned every shell back into the guns. This man had just retired, Leo told me. He would not talk dates. The colonel advised Leo not to reveal what he had said. 16. Barry Potter independently confirmed his story, adding that the rounds fired reverse direction in flight and returned to the guns they were fired from, where apparently they exploded, killing troops on the ground. 17. Those soldiers had no choice, they were simply obeying orders. If true, and assuming this was the same group which contacted Leo, such an egregious retaliation would seem contrary to their declared ethics. Barry, however, emphasized that this was not quite the case. Leo always maintained that the aliens' concern was with protecting and preserving the planet Earth, not mankind, he told me. He often hinted darkly that the aliens would not hesitate to sacrifice human life to defend their activities or to assure the survival of life on Earth. 18. I should mention here that since the 1940s, a number of craft, evidently of different origin from those encountered by Leo, have successfully been shot down, resulting in the destruction of a large number of our aircraft by alien craft, as reported in my previous book. 19. After we left the ship, Leo continues in his book, we sat on the ground for a while, all seven of us, looking up at the stars, and talking about different things for perhaps another 2 hours. I hope we will see you again, said one of the men, as they bade Leo farewell. It will be quite a while, though, because we are traveling back to our own galaxy. There will be another one of our spaceships traveling about your world, but they will make far fewer landings than we have. They will be more interested in what man is doing in outer space. We separated then with very deep feelings, wrote Leo, and I started back for my car. Light was provided for me all the way back. I was about half a mile from the ship when I began to notice how warm the area around me seemed to be, although it had grown quite cold out. As I approached my car, I heard the motor running. I never understood how or why they had started my car, but it was nice and warm as I climbed into it. Leo Dorschk died in April 2007, aged 86 years. In my meetings with him in Helena, Montana, and in subsequent communications, Leo came across as genuine, a no-nonsense man. I also learned that he was very well connected. In his business dealings, Leo proved to be a formidable opponent. Barry Potter told me, I consider being a rough opponent a positive character trait. His competitors saw this primarily in his behavior while estimating, bidding, and completing jobs, for which he often served as what we call a general contractor, overseeing several subcontractors involved in the overall job. Leo did no advertising, relying upon word-of-mouth recommendations from his customers. His philosophy was to do many jobs with a lower profit margin rather than fewer jobs with a high margin, as was common among his competitors. 20. There is a wealth of additional information in Leo Dorschk's book. To conclude this chapter, the following is excerpted from the last two pages. If their intent is to eliminate humanity, I have no doubt the easiest course would be to step back and allow us to destroy ourselves. Yet they continue to return, year after year, century after century, and work very hard while they were here. We never saw them in the winter months when insects and plant life are dormant. I think part of their work here was related to the study of how we were poisoning the environment in those times. I think they were analyzing the grasshoppers, which eat a large amount of foliage, for chemical poisons in our environment. I know they were very concerned about our nuclear and chemical weapons and our warlike nature. What a problem we must be for them, always threatening the health and safety of this beautiful planet, which is their responsibility to protect. The picture that comes to mind is a crowd of unruly children fighting and playing in a carefully tended garden with no regard for the problems they are causing for the gardener. Taken from http://projectivealon.net/forum/showthread.php?9462. Else to read or listen to. On the Itabira contact good. A very interesting contact case indeed this, and I have begun uprighting of this book as audio files on http://galactic.no/rune/woodboker/may2016 upload/itabira/http://galactic.no/rune/woodboker/may2016 upload/itabira notes/.